415-346-3740. And I also wanted to make sure that people are aware that we do have something called our Covenant Campaign. And what the Covenant on Homelessness is it's a covenant amongst San Franciscans saying that we do agree that there should be other alternatives to addressing homelessness in our neighborhoods other than calling in the police, and that we don't agree that the police should be the number one or even play any role in addressing homelessness. And so we have a covenant amongst San Franciscans, which is a which makes up a commitment of San Franciscans to help set up neighborhood groups in our own neighborhoods of homeless and housed people to address these issues both on the short and long term, in much more humane and sensible ways.
Information about the covenant can be gotten at the same number?
Yeah, and we also, you know, we're willing to work with people to help set up those neighborhood groups to take this other. To address the issue from a neighborhood level on this in this much more progressive way, and to counteract some of the merchants groups that are trying to deal with this from a punitive and oppressive fashion.
Mm-hmm. Any upcoming events that we should know about?
There's a candlelight vigil for Mark Garcia, which isn't directly related to our work, although it is related to the issue of the misuse of police resources in San Francisco, especially people with psychiatric disabilities. And that's going to be on Wednesday, April 15th at 7 p.m. at St. Peter's Church, 24th Street at Alabama, to support the family of Mike Garcia, who was killed by police officers last year.
And there have been no punitive measures or no disciplinary measures taken by the police commission yet?
Exactly. At this point, as far as I'm aware, neither the OCC nor the police commission, the police department, have taken any action in that case.
And similarly, I guess San Francisco is a pepper spray city, right?
San Francisco is a pepper spray, and in fact, you know, Mark Garcia was sprayed with pepper spray before he died.
And was that considered a causative factor in his death?
Yes.
Anything else coming up, Judy?
There's nothing I can think of right now.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate the extensive analysis. We've been talking to Judy Appel, a staff attorney, tell me if I got this wrong, for the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco.
Hey.
Hey, thank you very much, Judy. And that was Judy Appel, as I mentioned before, staff attorney for the Coalition on Homelessness, which is a group that publishes the Street Sheet in San Francisco and has been doing a number of other programs to fight police oppression, as well as to give homeless people other alternatives up there in San Francisco. If you have any questions about any of that, you can always give me a call locally, and I can pass you on to the Coalition on Homelessness, give you an address and a number. The number to call is 423-4833 off-air. But on-air, we do have a studio line. If you have any thoughts about what's been said, you want to call in and engage in dialogue here, the voice line into the studio is 423-5361. So jump on your phones, because we have an open line, 423-5361. In the studio, however, we have a full house. Boy, we have got the place packed. Don't tell the Free Radio Santa Cruz people. I think we may even be over our limit. So we'll pretend that we're not. And we have our first guest is David Silva, who's a Green Party organizer, been working with a committee to repeal the sleeping ban. He's been lurking around the Pogonip issues, been seen dealing with HIV homeless issues. What are you going to start with, David?
Well, let's see, where to start. I mean, this week, the Santa Cruz experience has been a combination of both shame and pride. I was very, very proud of Santa Cruz and all the people that turned out for the Pogonip Master Plan Tuesday night. There are some people that were absolutely wrong. I think the a fellow who wore his uniform, who's head of state parks, to come down and give us his opinion about our parks and misrepresent things was very, very apparent. And the whistle was blown on him by several citizens. But I was very proud of the number of citizens that are so well educated on the issues involving the Pogonip, and how the Pogonip as a green belt is actually distinct from the other green belt areas. I was very, very impressed with Mike Rodkin's call for ecological wisdom in solving this problem, it just all in all, I was impressed with the commissioners. I was impressed with the presentation. It was a great exercise in democracy, and as was declared by everybody, it was just the beginning the Pogonet Master Plan process, which is nice. It was a time to resolve questions and unanswered questions, and there are many, many unanswered questions. The one thing that became very, very apparent was the environmental impact report was extremely incomplete. It was not only incomplete, but it was also very ignorant in the way it came out. It ended up being very biased towards the Homeless Garden Project.
You know, this is, to me, and perhaps to many people listening, this is all kind of mysterious, I mean, or technical sounding. I mean, what do ordinary people care about this arcane discussions about an environmental impact statement on the Pogonet? I mean, what does all that mean? What were the substantive issues that ordinary people can relate to that happened last Tuesday night at City Council?
Well, speaking just of what happened at Tuesday night at City Council, the Pogonet area is an entirely undeveloped area right now. It's been developed...
580 acres?
Yes. It's entirely undeveloped area. It has the potential of being a connector for bicycles between Wilder and Cowell. So that potential was being addressed by the Environmental Impact Report as part of the master plan. There's a potential, however, of those bicycles also joining in all the fire trails along with the hikers and the equestrian passenger people there, so that we have a combination of pedestrians with leashes and dogs and bikes and horses and dirt bikes. Probably is a really bad combination, especially considering all the evidence I saw of bicycles being directly responsible for most of the erosion on our roads in these areas at this time. It's been a hard enough winter for erosion anyway, but when you have bicycle grooves to increase the erosion, and then when you have to stop that erosion by cutting across the roads, and when you cut across the roads, then you start making a swamp to which actual live oak trees are falling over, we don't want that to happen to the Pogonet.
Right. Well, you know, these environmental issues, of course, are important to many of us, but my show tends to focus on those often overlooked aspects of the environment, the human beings that are treated like debris downtown. Now, one thing I noted that was not in the Pogonet Master Plan, but which has been promised for years, ever since the Coral Street Open Air Shelter closed in 1995, we've heard people saying, well, actually, a decade ago, when there was people fasting to death in front of... They actually didn't fast to death because the city responded, but they fasted in front of the county building. They fasted at the town clock, demanding a cold and rainy night shelter for homeless people, ending the sleeping ban, and also a campground in the Pogonet. And this is a large piece of property that the city owns, among others, that could be used, a small part of it, for a homeless campground. Instead, I guess the big debate has been around the issue of the Homeless Garden Project. There was a lot of hostility to the Homeless Garden Project having any space there. Now, as far as I'm concerned, as I've said before, though I favor Pelton Street property democratic process, don't like to see the Homeless Garden Project go under, I've always felt it was kind of one of these little show play piece numbers that didn't mean a hell of a lot, because a real campground for homeless people, which serves homeless people, is one thing. A project that employs 14 to 20 homeless people and is not even self-sustaining is something else. What did you think about the lack of a homeless campground in the Pogonet plan, and can that be addressed before the issue gets finalized?
I seriously doubt whether that will be addressed. I don't think that it's going to... The one opportunity where it will be addressed is, Ed Davidson spoke towards the legal requirement for campsites somewhere in some of the Greenbelt area when we got some of this property from the state. So there will be a foot in the door to start talking about camps, but he's talking about our obligation to the state and talking about tourism. That's quite different than a homeless campsite. The reality of the situation is, Robert, that the Pogonet now is the biggest homeless campsite in Santa Cruz. And the reality of the situation, I have this straight from Jim Lang's mouth in a Greenbelt meeting, that there are a large number of homeless people camping in the Pogonet, and those people that are not misbehaving, according to him, are given a fair warning and then some time to clear out and so forth. But those people that are behaving, he says that the rangers are not clearing people out of the Pogonet or out of any of the Greenbelt areas. However, if you talk to any homeless person that does any camping, you know that this doesn't seem to jive. So Jim Lang most likely is lying. So,
yeah, Lebensraum Lang, as I call him, but because he always wants more living room for those who already have enough living room and less living room for those who don't even have any living room. is a personable man. You know, actually, I'm on friendly terms with Jim.
He's a sweetie pie.
He's been, you know, he's been kind of the head cheese for the last 15 years at least around Parks and Rec. But he's also been the major moving force criminalizing homeless people in Parks and Rec areas, city parks. For instance, in 1983 or 84, he had all the city parks closed after San Lorenzo Park was closed at night. He established curfews in all those parks. In 1991, he established a curfew at the town clock. Around the same time, he was removing benches from the mall in order to, without public hearings, because certain merchants didn't like homeless people gathering at those benches, and we found that similarly, benches are being removed again downtown. Then, of course, he closed the levee most recently. The entire river levee has been closed to everybody, certainly, but it affects people who are homeless most severely because other people have a place to go to, whereas these folks often sleep under the bridges. So the guy is completely insensitive to homeless concerns, and yet at the same time, because he's the liberal face of the city council, or he likes to be a part of that liberal face, he has to present that appearance.
Well, I guess you could say what we have in both in Santa Cruz County and in Santa Cruz City is that our departments are really very, very independent, and they're sort of run like little dynasties, and his dynasty is serving tourist interests, just as Chief Belcher's dynasty is serving the downtown association's interests, especially in regards to homeless people. So the attack on homeless people by the police and their obvious training to attack homeless people and to scare them, to clear them out, to take away their dogs, to threaten them, to take away, to not give them basic human dignity and to violate their constitutional rights continuously by the police is because that dynasty is under the control of the downtown association, just as the Parks and Recreation dynasty is under control of tourism.
Yeah, actually, regarding shopping carts, I was going to go directly into a taped interview I had today with Skidmark Bob Duran, who was a free radio broadcaster, a cop watcher, a musician, and he also did some interesting analysis and observation of the Santa Cruz's attempt to duplicate the San Francisco practice of seizing shopping carts from homeless people. That was under the leadership of Butchie Baker and Officer Jim Howes, and I believe there was a lieutenant involved in it. Could have been Lieutenant Habey. I don't want to misstate that. Not sure if we're going to hold Habey responsible for this one. But in any case, that was going on. Duran actually will, later in the show, if we have time, talk about that issue. He himself was arrested for having observing this shopping cart seizure going on. Butchie Baker sped after him with his siren and his lights on and arrested him for having a milk crate on the back of his bicycle, for which he went to court today, and we'll talk more about that later. You're also, David, involved in HIV homeless activity in terms of covering that situation. You want to give us some sense of what's going on there?
Yeah, I'm chairman of the Client Advisory Council for the HIV community for Santa Cruz County, and we've dedicated this year to reaching out to homeless, reaching out to women, reaching out to heterosexual community that's HIV positive, and reaching out to South County. And so far in our studies that we've done on the homeless issue, and we've done a couple articles now, we are finding lots of problems that we didn't expect to find. Not only is there a housing crisis that's going to create a much larger HIV homeless population, but the HIV homeless population really has not very many places where they can be served. And the reports we're hearing from the homeless HIV community themselves directly is that the police are being very, very, very much big assholes. They're taking a lover who has to take care of his HIV mate, is being taken to court for having prescriptions for Imodium AD, my God, and for having prescription for Motrin on him that he's going to go pick up for his lover. And as far as I know, anytime anyone calls up a pharmacy and say, someone, my roommate or someone's coming up to pick a prescription for me, the pharmacy doesn't seem to matter, care about it. But this seems to be a personal vendetta of one of the particular officers. I don't know, in this particular case, I can't remember that particular officer. Also, I was shopping in my market when a bunch of homeless people were gathered around in front of the market. I would say they were being a little bit rowdy. They were being very, very camaraderie. They were greeting someone. Maybe the person had a little extra money. I don't know what the excitement was about. But one of the people that I know as a regular, you know, one of the homeless regulars, also a long, long time resident of Santa Cruz,
when I, by the time I finished shopping, he was injured and laying on the ground. The police and the fire department came, and I must say they treated him very well and very fast. However, a certain police officer, and I heard from someone else that it actually was Officer Lefevre, which is not surprising, but all I know is the police officers let the public that were standing around, which include his homeless friends, the people that he has to cluster with for safety, the people that are his support system, now know that he's HIV positive. They outed him right there. I don't know how much retraining these people have to have. I know the needle exchanges are giving them retraining. They're getting all kinds of training, but there seems to be a real bad attitude with the police right now in the HIV homeless community.
Yeah, Officer Lefevre, for those of us who've been following him, you may remember he's the officer who gave me a ticket for leaning against a trash can and then continued to press that ticket even in the midst of being informed that there was no such crime. And unfortunately, the statute of limitations has passed on the ticket, so civil suits are not probably doable at this time, and often they require more energy and more attention than a lot of us have. But it's best to consider small claims court action if you're being harassed by the police. At least you can get the cop to have to respond in court, or else he has to essentially accept a summary judgment by a judge. So it can force these folks to come to attention on that matter. We have some other folks in the studio. Does anybody want to comment on any of the subjects that have been discussed, or shall we wait until it's your segment? Yes, we see Marco Marconi. Macaroni, Macalangi, Uncle Marco here is nodding. What do you have to say about
that? Oh, about Poganip, I see Poganip as being a power spot for me personally, and I'm real in touch with it. And the whole Poganip area, I could see a tribe of people living there of about 200 people, a really tight-knit tribe, keeping the place environmentally sane, and it being a really good growth process. They could serve as docents. They could clear the underbrush and just do some good things with it, live naturally as part of the extension of the Ohlone tribe, and the Poganip sector of the Ohlone tribe is what I would suggest. And also housing people along the same lines and within the same confederation or autonomous legalities of the Ohlone's true possession of the land, possibly housing people along the river.
You're actually involved in housing issues pretty deeply. You are you and your associate Donna Dice here, who does all the work while you get all the credit, is part of the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, and we're going to be talking with you more at greater length. I encourage anyone in the audience who wants to join this and who has 35 cents to make a phone call, isn't that a laugh, or possibly a phone at home, because that's certainly a cheaper deal, give a call to the studio line at 423-5361. That's 423-5361. It looks like it's raining outside, so you can't go outside and cavort under the stars. Come on and give us a call inside. We can use your input into these issues and other issues. Should the Poganip be available for homeless people, in at least maybe an acre of it, for homeless people as a campground? Are police officers acting properly downtown around the city? Do we have any police officers who wish to call in and defend the behavior of their brethren? Hey, come on, we'll give you an opportunity to respond. Don't be scared. You can deal with me. I won't cut you off. I'm quite civil in such matters. Besides, we're desperate. We need callers. Call in, you guys, and you gals. David, you have something more you want to say?
Yeah, I mean, regarding the homeless garden project location, it's I understand that from the original master plan that there was a plan to put a homeless garden project in that area, and the homeless garden project people were involved in the early development of the master plan for Poganip. But I really resent, you know, what's happened with the Pelton property and the whole sort of chucking away of the concept of urban agriculture. I think the urban agriculture training and solution. Urban agriculture is
what happened, the
Pelton property was simply sold out from under the homeless garden project. Now, you may think it was a showcase, but my personal experience is that, you know, the homeless problem has to be fought on many, many fronts, and that this was one of the most successful projects. And it was a small front. It's that transition area, just like community housing. It's the area where people are going into training and learning how to make it again, or being able to make it again, getting employment and getting on their feet again. And the Homeless Garden Project has been a success story for clients that I personally know would have not made it if it hadn't been for the Homeless Garden Project while I was a eligibility worker. And I saw some of them speaking there. It was really quite rewarding to see, you know, people that I recommended to go to the Homeless Garden Project to be there and speaking. So for them to deny urban agriculture by saying we're going to have green belt agriculture because, you know, we took that urban agriculture away from you. I think it was one speaker that spoke how, what about urban agriculture? And I would like to have heard more talk about, you know, about this thing. What I think is good about what I saw Tuesday night is that C.S. Scott and everybody made it very, very clear this was just the very beginning of a very long process. So I think that there's going to be that increases opportunities for alternative uses. And then I'd like to speak to a couple other issues before I leave. I'm about ready to go. I talk about the sleeping ban and so forth.
Right. Well, C.S. Scott did a number of things on Tuesday night that I was pleased with, although I criticized her in a speech, which I'm going to read later in the show, after Celia Scott's champion here, David Silva, has left. She was, when the public hearing question came up, she stated that that folks would have at least 3 minutes to speak, and she implied they would not be cut off at 3 minutes, but that rather the city clerk would hold up a little sign that said 3 minutes was up, instead of having the usual "your time is up, get out" approach that's been used by city councils in the past. Now, I mean, actually, did they actually follow that practice? Were you observing that on television?
I have it on tape. I watched the whole thing till the very, very end. They let people that had informed long presentations make the entire presentation. They had people that were actually qualified by the audience as saying, yes, he's speaking for us. A cluster of people speak longer. There's people that just simply wanted to finish their thoughts and let him speak. It was a real participation. Really felt like democracy. I mean, I really felt good about what I saw.
Right. Well, that's unusual, and I hope that continues at City Council. In fact, it was pointed out to me by someone else that Celia Scott has never ordered anyone arrested at City Council or even directed the police to deal with anybody, unlike almost every other mayor by this time. We're going into early April. Riot Act Rotkin, of course, has urged that people be arrested at different times, but Celia Scott has not been responding to that. Let's turn now to the sleeping ban, which you say you'd like to cover, David. I know you're with the committee to repeal the sleeping ban. I have here a very well-written flyer, "What Are You Signing?" About the 6,500-plus Santa Cruz City voter signatures needed by May 28th to give voters a chance to replace the existing camping sleeping ban law with a new law at the November 98 general election. And the current law, of course, makes it illegal to cover up with blankets outside your home or a vehicle between the hours of 11 p.m. and 8:30. I guess you can cover up in a hotel if you want. Makes it illegal to sleep between the hours 11 and 8:30 anywhere in the city limits outside of a house or hotel. Makes it illegal to sleep in any car in the city limits, even a car parked on private property with the consent of the tenant or owner. Makes sleeping twice within 48 hours a misdemeanor, punishable by up to 6 months and a $1,000 fine. Police have jailed sleepers for up to several weeks without trial under this law. Does not require police to warn you or have a complaint from an injured party before ticketing you. Does not require police to send you to an area where sleeping is legal. Punishes one act of sleeping with a $162 fine or about 60 hours of mandatory community service. That's the current law. The new camping ban, with the sleeping ban repealed in it, would legalize covering up with blankets, period, would unconditionally decriminalize the act of sleeping without or within non-residential and non-beachfront districts, would authorize City Council to ticket sleepers who refuse to move from residential and beachfront districts where council has prohibited sleeping, would make the act of sleeping itself legal, would retain laws against sitting and lying in commercial and riverfront areas, would require police to warn sleepers in prohibited areas and give them 10 minutes to move to a legal area, would make sleeping in a legally parked car legal in some areas, and would remove the 6 months jail, $1,000 penalty section for sleeping and make violations punishable by a smaller fine. Camping itself would remain illegal in the city of Santa Cruz, and criminal penalties for littering, disturbing the peace, open container, and public intoxication would remain in force. Now, do you want to comment about this?
Well, thank you for that clarification, Robert. We've said from the beginning that this campaign is going to be an educational campaign. One of the reasons for that is that the opposition is bent on it, on mystifying the issue. They will continue to call this a repeal of the camping ban, as the Sentinel did recently, and they've promised not to do that anymore, if we can believe Sentinel promises. We may have to put an injunction on them. We haven't completely decided that in the committee yet. The idea that it has to be an educational campaign is quite simple. It's because most of the people, once they see the actual law, are quite willing to repeal to repeal the sleeping ban and amend the actual camping ordinance. But if we can't fight, argue about what we're, if we can't agree on what we're arguing about, then most people just end up voting no. So we have a real long, hard campaign of making sure we get on the ballot, first of all, and we need all of you to show up at Saturday at 1 o'clock at Loudon Nelson Center on the back porch. I have a caller.
Caller, yes.
But do we actually have a caller?
Hi, Robert. Exactly.
Hello.
Hi, caller. Caller, first of all, can our guests in the studio hear the caller? Say something, caller.
Hi.
Hi.
It's Reckless. I wanted to talk about, I didn't mean to backtrack you too much. I'm out of range and I can't hear you right now, but I heard you talking about how the police in Santa Cruz are not sensitive to the homeless issue as far as the homeless that are afflicted with AIDS.
Or HIV positive.
Or HIV positive, correct. And I was talking to an officer in private. I didn't ask his name because I thought he would be a little more open to talk to me if I wasn't asking his badge number, etc. And we were talking about needle exchange and what your guest was talking about just goes to show that the police are just uneducated about what's going on with that. And like, you know, the cop that I was talking to in the bar or whatever was just saying how that needle exchange is like handing somebody bullets, and they don't understand that, you know, needle exchange may be the only place that a junkie sees in between, you know, having an addictive lifestyle and getting clean, and that's a way to stop the disease from spreading. And I just wanted to say that I think it's mainly just that cops are uneducated, and I was really glad to hear your guest say that that needle exchange is working with the police, maybe to try and educate them a little better on why needle exchange is there and why it's such a good thing, and that it doesn't necessarily promote drug use. It actually, you know, saves lives, saves people from getting HIV positive. So that's all I wanted to say, and I wanted to say I like your show.
Thanks, Reckless.
All right.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I think it's important for us to, when we're in this battle, the war on the poor, whatever you want to call it, to realize that police officers are human beings. They're very much into role. When you put a uniform on a role and you give it a lot of power, you know, they're very much caught up into role. So it becomes even more important for the chief of police to be called to question. If the chief of police wants to play politics, then let him run for city council and stop being the chief of police. You know, if the head of the park and recreations wants to play politics and do favors for people, then let him stop being the head of parks and recreation and let him run for political office, let him run for city council. But it's really important that they do the job of educating the police officers. It's becoming more and more apparent to more and more people. Just the other day, I was in front of behind Bookshops Santa Cruz, and there was a young police officer sitting on his motorcycle watching traffic there in that little triangle there by the bank where people, you have to walk around to get into the back door of Bookshop Santa Cruz. And he was sitting with his hand resting on the butt of his gun with one hand down, one foot down, and leaning on his motorcycle, just waiting for someone to make some kind of horrible traffic area where Front Street turns into River Street. What the hell was his problem? I mean, you know, what fantasy was he living in, and who was educating that officer? So I think how you educate the officers is very, very important, and they really need to know now that camping is not sleeping.
That would be nice if Karen Clark would only get it right in the Sentinel. I know you've attempted to have that issue corrected repeatedly through calling the Sentinel, asking them to properly not just designate the issue, it's being the sleeping ban that your committee is trying to repeal, not the camping ban, but also to get the name of your committee right. Your committee is the committee to repeal the sleeping ban, which they keep seeming to forget to mention.
Yeah, well, that to me indicates the willfulness of their changing our public service announcements and changing our press releases. If they go through and actually change, cross out sleeping ban each time and put in camping ban, and then they can't put our name when every other organization whose meetings they're talking about have the name of the organization, but they can't put our name because our name says committee to repeal the sleeping ban. That would blow, you know, their whole approach of trying to undermine us. So even though they won't admit to willfulness on it and we can't prove willfulness on it, we can't slap an injunction on them. We're talking to a lawyer. The lawyers advise us that we just sort of meet with the Sentinel right now and try to get from them in writing what they've committed to over the phone.
You You've also been engaged in your own lawsuit and trying to get damages from the city for injuries committed when you were simply acting as a sort of a concerned citizen in the City Hall lockdown sleeping protest in 1996. Any updates on that?
Well, you know, as you know, I don't like to talk about, you know, the court case too much. Why give them any more, ammunition than they need, any more, let them know what our strategy is. They've been very, very, very foolish not to talk to us so far. It's given, well, the thing is that not only do I, we have lots of evidence, 5 videotapes, 3 audio tapes, all kinds of witnesses, government, police officers that are willing to testify. I mean, not only is their case really bad that way, but now they've allowed the medical record to accumulate, and it looks very, very bad for them. But I can't go into strategies where all I'm saying is that, yes, it's happening right now, and I'm very, very much involved in the lawsuit, and I wish they'd get on the stick like the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has ordered them to do.
Also, I'd like to comment before you leave, although it may be a bit late to do this since you're almost out of the studio, but the Metro this week has a couple of interesting letters, the Metro Santa Cruz.
Free drugs.
Do they have free drugs? I wasn't aware of that.
The
letter talks about an article that appeared last week or the week before talking about the, what's called delinquent parking ticket consequences and how essentially there's a huge revenue machine that's being used to strip citizens of their wallets, actually strip everybody of their wallets, whether you're a citizen or not. And as a kind of the person withholds his name, he writes about this. It doesn't take a law degree from Harvard to know that these simple words about the Seventh Amendment, where you can actually, the right to trial by